Abram was told to go out and look up at the night sky, one of the reasons why I have a little property 2 hours outside of town over in the country near Stillwell, between Stillwell and Salisaw, is so I can go look in the night sky. Have you ever tried to go outside your house here in town and look up at the night sky? You can't see much. You don't realize all of the light pollution that's floating around us that blocks our ability to see. If you take one of those apps that's on the phone, you know, the Look at the Stars app, I don't know what it's called, but Stardust or Star Map or something, and you hold that up, boy, there's hundreds of dots of things that are up there. And then you turn it off and you look up and there's only four things. So then you're sure that the app is wrong. No, it's that our sight is wrong. God tells Abram to go outside and look up in the night sky, and your descendants will be greater than the stars that you can see. God looks at Abram and God sees more glory in Abraham. He will later become Abraham. God sees more glory in him than all the stars in the sky. We can't even see all the stars in the sky. If you go to the most clearest place on earth, if you go out to the Hubble telescope, the reason we sent the Hubble telescope up there was to get it out of the interference of our atmosphere. And even the Hubble telescope can't see far enough to see every star in the sky. Our vision is distorted. Our spiritual vision is distorted too. We don't see ourselves the way God sees us. Sin gets in the way of our vision. It gets in the way of our ability to understand our own self, and it gets in the way then of our ability to understand God and our relationship to God. You remember Adam and Eve? You remember those two, right? They're sort of famous. I even get Adam a lot in the crossword puzzle, right? They're so famous they made the crosswords. They used to walk with God in the garden. Until what? Until they fell into sin. And then they started hiding in the bushes. Because they said, we're naked. We can't go in front of God naked. What's he going to think? Got some kind of commune down here or what? Their vision became distorted by sin. Nothing had changed on God's part. God still looks at Adam and Eve and loves them. But what had changed was in their ability to see God as he really is, or to see themselves as they really are. Prior to the sin, they used to look at one another with complete openness, transparency, love, trust, goodwill, desire for the good of the other. After sin, they look at each other with distrust. After sin, they no longer trust each other. After sin, they're not sure, what is the other one thinking? He may be looking at me and planning to use me. She may be looking at me and thinking thoughts that are not true about me. Their vision becomes distorted even towards each other. Knowing that this is true of us, knowing that sin does distort our ability to understand God, to be in relationship with God, to understand one another, and to be in relationship with one another, it then behooves us to search for a fix. How can we fix our vision? You know, we use these things to fix this vision. Oh, wait, where'd everybody go? What can we use to fix our spiritual vision? In Lent, the church in her wisdom gives us these three traditional practices. prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. Almsgiving is a crossword puzzle word too, probably, because we don't use it in everyday speech. Right? So, giving to the poor. Giving to those who have less than we do. Prayer immediately corrects one thing about our relationship with God that is constantly becoming incorrect, which is that He is God. That we're not God. As funny as that sounds, it's easy to forget that God is God and I'm not God. Have you ever done it? Every day. Often, in our relationships with one another, in our own thoughts about ourselves and what our life needs and requires, it's very easy for us to forget that God is God. God has created us. We are not like God. We are made in His image, but He is completely other. If I see an ant crawling across the floor and I fall in love with the ant, and I love the ant so much that I want to tell the ant all about my hopes and dreams for the ant. And I want to communicate to the ant in a way that the ant can understand how much I love the ant. And I want the ant to ask me the same questions. It won't happen, will it? Not because there's anything wrong with the ant. The ant has got everything that the ant is supposed to have. He's a perfect little ant. He has all the antness that he needs. And there's nothing wrong with me. Well, there's a lot of things wrong with me, but in terms of my humanity, I've got all the humanity I'm supposed to have. But there's such a great difference between the nature of the ant and the nature of me as a person that it's impossible for us to communicate at that level. Well, extrapolate that into our relationship with God. How much greater a gulf of difference is there between us and God? Between our human nature and God's divine nature? Vastly greater difference. Which explains why we can't know everything about God, but it also explains why sometimes God has difficulty communicating to us. Because we get distracted by many things. Prayer helps us to focus, helps us to restore a relationship so that it becomes a daily, hourly, minute-by-minute part of our existence, and then we remember that God is God. Fasting is sort of like going to the gym in a way. If you go to the gym, you're not going to get paid, for example, right? You're going to sweat and work hard, maybe harder than you do in the rest of your life ordinarily. And yet no one's going to pay you. You're going to be lifting all that heavy weight. No one's going to pay you for doing it. What you're going to get out of the gym is the goodness of the training in your body. So there's a certain artificiality about the gym. But there's also a great benefit to the gym. In fasting, we create an artificial circumstance of hunger. Because we've got food, right? We're not fasting because we don't have any food. How many times have you gone to your pantry and looked, right? It's full. And you're looking and looking and think, gosh, there's nothing to eat. Because our appetites become so finely attuned and we just crave a certain thing and everything else doesn't look good. If a starving person comes and looks at the pantry, they're just going to tear into it. Whatever opens first is what we're going to eat. Well, that's the way we live, and we end up focusing on our appetites. We end up becoming overly focused on the things that we're hungry for. And we forget that the thing that we need is God alone. We forget to hunger for God. When we fast, we create this artificial circumstance of hunger, and as we feel it and deny ourselves the ability to immediately fix it, we remember that we must always be hungering for God, and fasting helps us to remember that. And giving alms cures us of the other side of this coin. Even Pope Francis has spoken a lot about our consumerism. The fact that we're surrounded by so many things and so many options that we end up becoming a slave to the things around us. Advertising is so ubiquitous around us that we don't even notice it. But people are spending millions and millions of dollars a year on advertising to convince us that our life is terrible. That we don't have nearly enough things. Right? We don't have the latest and greatest of whatever it is. Have you noticed that honey comes now in a bottle that has a no-drip spout built in? Have you noticed that spout? It's a pretty high-tech spout. It's got a little rubber diaphragm that's pierced with a very small hole, and you have to put pressure on it to open the hole enough for honey to come out. But as soon as the pressure disappears, the diaphragm closes and no drip. That's pretty high technology for honey. Why do they do that? So they can advertise, hey, this honey bottle is better than that one. And it works. And we start thinking, I got to go home and throw that honey away because now I got this no-drip bottle. You're laughing because we do it. We do it, don't we? We get caught up in the things that surround us without even knowing that they're owning us. When we give alms, we take something that we need to live on, our money, our clothes, our food, something, and we give that to someone else. And in order for us to do that, we have to take ourselves out of the center of our own heart and put someone else there. Oh, that poor person could probably use this $5 that I was going to use to buy a honey bottle that doesn't drip. Right? In order for me to give that person $5, I got to take myself out of the center of my heart and put that person there. Almsgiving retrains us to be open to the other, to be desiring to have the other in our heart. And God, who is the complete other, will then have a greater space because we've created one. So prayer, fasting, almsgiving, these three things that we do during Lent are not just nice things to do, they're curative of the blindness and the distortion that exists in our spiritual sight that prevents us from seeing Jesus transfigured, yes, but even our own glory, the glory of the Son of God who chooses to reside and dwell in us, which fills us with great dignity. Let's stand together so that we can profess our faith.